Chapter 15. After Perkins ended the call with Marcellus, she read the message again, twice, before sending a reply. She asked who the message had come from and why she should trust them. Another message came almost immediately. "Think of us as your mysterious benefactor," the message read. "You can trust us because we're the only ones telling you the truth, and we are your only hope of freeing this planet from the Kristang. You are our first choice, but we have other options. You need us." Emily Perkins could not find fault with that argument. She and the mysterious benefactor, who she decided to call Emby for short, went back and forth for 10 minutes until she had no more questions to ask. Emby had answered some of her questions and declined to answer others. The intelligence officer in her suspected that Emby was a group of Ruhar native to Paradise who wanted to prevent their own government from selling the planet out from under them. They couldn't take action by themselves and they couldn't trust their own military, so they were using humans, who were even more desperate to prevent the Kristang from permanently regaining control of the planet. It was one hell of a story Emby had told. If she agreed to go along, they would tell her more. They would tell her at each point during the mission only what she needed to know. Perkins liked that. It gave her some confidence that Emby knew what they were doing. "I'm in," she sent back. "What is the next step?" "We will get you off the train and secure the transport and equipment you need," Emby replied. "You will be leaving the train tonight after you were supposed to be asleep. Your next step is to persuade your team to join you." "Sure," thought Perkins, "no problem. Before I can persuade Jarrett, Chaika, and Coulter to join me, I will need to convince them that I'm not crazy, and that this isn't a joke." "A secret mission?" Jesse cocked his head skeptically. "What, are we going off-world to find Bishop? Something like that?" "No, this has nothing to do with Bishop," Perkins said, surprised. She hadn't thought of Bishop at all. "I don't know where he went, where he is, or whether he's still alive. I don't even know if the Ruhar told us the truth. Maybe he did escape from that jail, and the Ruhar are looking for him. The story of him stealing a dropship and flying away on a secret mission? That I find hard to believe," Perkins frowned. "I have to warn you. This mission is not authorized by UNEF. They don't know about it, and they likely wouldn't authorize it if they knew. Does anyone have a problem with that?" Jesse looked out the window to the landscape of the alien planet passing by. A planet he was trapped on, and a planet that would soon be controlled by the cruel Kristang. "UNEF got us out here because they didn't know the truth and were too stupid to ask." He looked the former intelligence officer in the eye as he spoke. "Now I'm a farmer on an alien planet, and there is no way I can ever go home. I say to hell with UNEF. They've screwed everything up so far." "Amen to that, brother," Dave agreed. "I have no problem with it either, Major. But we will need weapons, and we don't have any." "We won't need weapons," Perkins explained. "This is going to seem odd, but what we need is drilling gear, excavation equipment." "Excavation equipment, like digging?" Dave asked. "Man, if this is about us trying to find gold or something like that, I'm going to be very disappointed." "Gold?" Shauna asked. "Are we hoping to find gold so the Ruha will think this planet is more valuable, so they'll send their fleet here to chase away the Kristang?" "No." Perkins shook her head in frustration. "No gold. If the Ruha want gold, they mine it from asteroids. This isn't about anything like gold." "Then what is it about, ma'am?" Jesse asked with his arms across his chest. "You asked us to trust you. I'd appreciate you trusting us." "Fair enough, Coulter. I don't know the whole story. Whoever is running this operation has me on a need-to-know basis also." As Perkins said that, she wondered if Emby was listening through her Z-phone. Probably they were, she decided. Before telling the three about the mission, she forwarded to them a message from Emby. Their mysterious benefactor had told her that anyone who opened that message would have absolutely unbreakable encryption on their phones. Perkins had been instructed to forward the message to anyone involved in the operation and not to anyone else. "I'm going to tell you everything I know, so here it is. When we got these Z-phones," she held hers up, "I had a ton of email. Then it all disappeared, except for one. I opened it to find a message from someone calling themselves our mysterious benefactor. I'm calling them Emby for short. They didn't say who they are, but I'm betting they're a group of native Ruhar who are not happy with the situation on this planet, and they can't trust their own government or military to take the appropriate action, so they're trusting us. What they want us to do is get rid of that Kristang battle group in orbit. She pointed to the sky. So what they want matches what is best for us. That's the only reason I agreed to take on this mission. That plus I don't see any other possibility of humans surviving on this planet long term. If the Kristang take over this planet permanently, none of us will live very long. I think you all know that.
I do, ma'am, Shauna said. But tell me, please. You got a mysterious email. That's what all this is about? Could it be a prank?
Yeah, Jesse added. Or disinformation? You intel types do that kind of stuff. This could be the Kristang trying to get us to do something stupid against them so they have an excuse to squash us like bugs.
That would be just like the lizards, Dave observed.
No, Perkins shook her head. The message contained intel I didn't know, and when I contacted the U.S. intel chief, he denied it. He denied it in a way that was way too quick, you understand? UNFHQ had this info, they know about it, and they haven't told us. Whoever our mysterious benefactor is, they know.
They know what?
What is it they know? Shauna was the first to ask. So Perkins told them. Told them how the Ruhar federal government had been negotiating to trade Paradise to the Kristang in exchange for more valuable territory. How the Ruhar fleet had never intended to recapture the planet in the first place. How that was why there had not been giant transport ships bringing evacuated Ruhar back to their home. Why the local Ruhar administration had not put more than token effort into rebuilding infrastructure.
Holy shit, Dave said quietly. Those motherfuckers. The Ruhar are selling us out.
Yes, Perkins agreed flatly. There was talk going around 6 to 8 months ago of UNEF declaring loyalty to the Ruhar. She could see everyone's eyes grow wide with surprise. HQ thought that might give the Ruhar more incentive to protect us from the Kristang raids that were burning out our crops. Then suddenly, that talk stopped, and we were told by HQ not to mention it again. Now I know why. HQ must have talked to the Ruhar, and the hamsters told us no. They didn't want our loyalty because then they'd be responsible for us, and they plan to leave us behind when they trade this planet away.
Shit, Jesse said, stunned. I'm not dumb enough to think the Ruhar would ever be our buddies, but I didn't think they would screw us like this.
We don't have any friends out here, people, Perkins declared. We're on our own. Truly on our own, because the Kristang have lost contact with Earth. The Ruhar confirmed that to me. The only reason I agreed to work with Embi on this mission is that our goals match in this case. We both want those Kristang ships out of orbit.
Ma'am, in the long run, what good does that do for us? Shauna asked. The Ruhar still plan to sell the planet out from under us?
Yeah, that's why I asked Embi the same question, and that's why I think our mysterious benefactor is a group of native Ruhar, because what Embi told me is that once that Kristang battle group isn't hanging over our heads, there is at least a possibility the federal Ruhar government could somehow be persuaded to keep Paradise. With the Kristang having the big guns in orbit, there is no possibility the Ruhar will keep this place in the long term.
Okay, Jesse said after taking a deep breath.
So the mission is to get rid of a Kristang task force of what, more than 20 warships? Did this MB say how the four of us are going to do that?
Coulter, if you think I've told you some incredible shit so far. Perkins smiled and tilted her head.
You ain't heard anything yet.
Wait, ma'am, Jesse said a few minutes later, his head spinning. There are giant maser cannons buried on this planet that the Kristang don't know about?
That the Kristang clan in orbit do not know. The Kristang clan that installed the projectors do know. But that group of Kristang is not here.
Right, Jesse said, thinking that keeping track of who was who in this war required a color-coded spreadsheet. The Kristang here don't know, and the Ruhar government and military don't know, and UNEF doesn't know. But some of the native Ruhar do know?
Exactly.
How? Jesse insisted. How do a bunch of native hamster farmers know all this when their government and military don't?
Perkins shrugged. Maybe some farmer was plowing a field and dug up a projector by accident. I don't know. And Demby didn't tell me how they found out about the projectors. It doesn't matter. What I do know is that the Ruhar government and military do not know, because they certainly would have used the projectors to stop the raids. Now, if the Ruhar government learned of the projectors, they would not use them against a full Kristang task force because that would sour the negotiations. What this MB wants is a shooting war between the Ruhar and the Kristang. They want to force their government's hand.
As long as that Kristang task force is in orbit, the native Ruhar are screwed. They can't trust their own government to do the right thing, so they're using us to do it for them.
I am pretty damn sick of people using us for their own ends.
She looked her three soldiers in the eyes and found complete agreement. But in this case, what they want is what we want. We can't tell UNFHQ because the Ruhar and Kristang have totally compromised the Z-Phone network. It's up to us to reactivate these projectors and knock those ships out of orbit.
Do you mind if I say holy shit, ma'am? Shauna asked, her mind still reeling.
You can say it for me too, Jarrett, Perkins smiled. I've had time to think about it and it's still blowing my mind. When the Ruhar hit Earth, she reminisced. I was on leave on a camping trip in Kentucky with friends. There was no cell phone service at the lake. We didn't see anything going on in the sky because it rained that morning. I didn't find out that Earth had been attacked by aliens until we hiked out 2 days later. Christ, that was one hell of a shock. Then I went into space, found out that the Kristang aren't our allies after all, that our way back to Earth has been cut off, and that the Ruhar are looking to trade this planet for a set of steak knives. So, when a mystery group tells me that we can destroy starships in orbit using secret maser cannons, I say, why the hell not? That isn't even the strangest thing that's happened to me this month.
Amen to that, Dave said, and bumped fists with Jesse.
I'm in.
You sure, man? Jesse asked.
Yeah, what the hell?
Dave frowned.
By the time we get back, someone will have stolen our couch anyway.
I'm in if you are, Jesse said, looking at Shauna. Shauna didn't hesitate. She wanted combat duty, she wanted to make a difference, and this was her opportunity. Somebody else could grow tomatoes in Lemuria.
Sign me up, ma'am, she saluted Perkins.
What are we going to do for weapons?
The Ruhar were careful to collect even the plastic spoons that came with their twice-a-day servings of nutrient mush.
Perkins was relieved and anxious. She had a team. Now she had the responsibility to execute the mission she'd accepted.
Embi says we won't need weapons. What we need is transport, and like I said, excavation equipment. These projectors are buried. We need to dig down to get at them.
The original Kristang installed the projectors, charged up their capacitors, activated a stealth field to fool subsurface scans, and then covered them with soil. Trees have grown up on some of them since then. Embi told me that when a projector is ready to fire, explosive charges will blow the soil away and the maser cannon muzzle projects above the surface, so we don't need to clear all that dirt away. What we do need is to dig a shaft down about 80 meters to access the power controls. The Kristang made these things go dormant when they left. Embi says we need to physically reattach power leads, something like that. They'll walk us through it when we get down there.
Ma'am, Shauna said, I've seen so much crazy shit out here that I'm ready to believe anything. But if this Embi is really a group of native Ruhar, why aren't they reactivating the projectors by themselves?
I asked myself the same question, Jarrett, Perkins admitted. My guess is either this Embi is a very small group, maybe even a single Ruhar, and they need our help. They can't trust any other Ruhar, but they can trust us because they know we are totally screwed if the Kristang take control of this planet. Or it could be that Embi wants to avoid getting in trouble if this whole operation goes south. The only thing I do know is that if there is any chance we can keep the Kristang away from this planet, I'm going to take it.
Same here, Shauna agreed. Growing tomatoes is not why she left Earth.
You can get us transport, ma'am?
No, Perkins shook her head. But Embi can. We will need a pilot.
I know a pilot, Shauna said with a smile.
There are a lot of pilots, Perkins noted.
Can we trust him?
We can trust her, Shauna insisted. I know she would do anything to fly again.
That's the problem, ma'am. She doesn't fly now.
How is she going to get a buzzard?
That will be Embi's problem.
We'll have transport, Dave said. Where are we going to get a drilling rig and someone to operate it?
That is going to be a little more difficult, Perkins acknowledged.
There were drills on Paradise. The Ruhar used them to dig wells for irrigating farmland. While they were not plentiful, they would also not be locked up and well guarded, as there normally wasn't any point to stealing a drill. The real problem was going to be finding a complete drilling rig that could be broken down to fit inside the cargo compartment of a truck or a buzzard. A buzzard was big. It could carry two Hamvees easily, so cargo capacity and weight were not the issue. What she did not know was what was the minimum length of a disassembled drill. She would need to ask Embi. Surely the hamsters knew the answer. Or could find it.
Well, Skippy, I said after we read the message from Perkins to Embi,
Perkins has a very good point. Are there any drill rigs that can fit inside a Buzzard?
Yes, duh. I already thought of that, Joe.
There is a type of compact drill rig that was designed specifically to break down to be transported by a Buzzard in one flight to service remote areas. It will certainly fit in a truck.
Oh, great. I was relieved. That is a question that I should have asked earlier. How many of these compact drill rigs are there on Paradise?
Three.
Three? On a whole planet? Holy shit. We have to steal one of only three special use items? Where are they right now?
One is being used to dig a well in the northwest corner of what UNEF calls Backstratiscan, about as far from Lemuria as you can get without going to an island. Another is at an airfield about 500 kilometers away from the active drill, being held in reserve in case of a problem with the first drill. The third is in a military warehouse on an airbase near the base of the space elevator.
You're kidding me. Two of them are way too far away, and the third is secured by the military. How the hell are we going to get one, then? How is Perkins going to get one? You have a plan for that? Is Perkins going to drive up to the airbase gate and ask for it politely, or, hey, I was on a roll. Maybe she can order it off the Ruha version of Amazon.
Yes.
Yes, yes to what?
The last one, Joe. The compact drill rig will be delivered to her wherever she needs it. It's a high-dollar item, so shipping is free.
That is a good point. We should probably get someone to sign for it.
I paused to collect my thoughts.
Skippy, I apologize. I should have known you would have a plan for this. Would you please, please, share your brilliant plan with us?
You didn't say pretty please with sugar on it, Joe. Let's pretend I did.
Fair enough. What I'm going to do, Joe, is to utilize the awesome power of bureaucracy. Count Chocula would appreciate this. I'll send a very official-looking equipment requisition to the airbase logistics officer. It will order that drill rig and everything else Perkins will need to be loaded onto a truck and delivered to some remote warehouse, wherever Perkins needs it. When the logistics officer calls headquarters to verify, like the good little soldier he is, I will handle the call myself and chew him out for not having moved the drill rig already.
That is a brilliant plan, Skippy. I wasn't being sarcastic.
Uh-huh.
We'll let bureaucracy work in our favor for a change.
The Ruha guard aboard the train was supposed to check on the humans every 4 hours, although there didn't seem to be much point in doing that. The train was taking the humans where they wanted to go, back to Lemuria. The only source of human food in the area was the nutrient mush that was locked in a cabinet. Optimal security measures would not have put all the mush containers in a cabinet in the same train car the humans occupied, but that was more convenient when it was time to feed them. And to the Ruha, the mush had an unpleasant smell. Best to keep it away from the Ruha passengers, few though they were. So when it was time for the guard to sleep, he set an alarm on his phone to wake him in 4 hours. Skippy, of course, deactivated that alarm, and when the guard awoke briefly 6 hours later, the clock on his phone told him he had been asleep for only 3 hours. Satisfied, he rolled over in his bunk and drifted off to sleep again, lulled by the gentle rockin' motion of the train. Before their Ruha guard had locked the door of the train car behind him, Perkins and her team had settled down to sleep for the night, or they had acted as if they were settling down for the night. As soon as the guard was gone, they quickly got their boots back on. Within 15 minutes, Perkins received a message that the guard had gone to sleep.
"How does MB know that?" Dave asked in a whisper. "They must have someone aboard this train," Shauna guessed.
"Makes sense," Major Perkins nodded and turned, as with a soft click, the cabinet containing all the canisters of yummy nutrient mush unlocked. Moving quietly, the team unloaded the canisters and rolled them up in the satchels they had made from a roll of cloth. Then they waited. They waited 32 minutes, with Perkins chafing at the delay, until MB signaled it was time. The train was slowing as it climbed a steep hill out of a river valley. They had heard the wheels clatter over a bridge shortly before. MB warned that the train would pick up speed again when it reached the top of the short grade, and the safe place to jump off the train was less than 100 meters long. For 100 meters, there was a field of Ruha crops alongside the tracks. Then the tracks were hemmed in by trees. Perkins got her team ready. Jesse volunteered to go first.
"I'll go first, then you jump and I'll catch you," he gallantly told Shauna.
"Screw that," Shauna said and dropped to the ground. She hit feet first, letting herself roll, mowing over a row of crops and getting a mouthful of dirt. She sprang to her feet and gave a thumbs up, barely able to see the other three faces in the open door of the train car.
Then she crouched to avoid being seen as she watched one, two, three others jump lightly and roll. Ski went last, hanging onto a railing and making sure the door closed behind him quietly and securely before he jumped. He almost left it too late. When he finished rolling, he was a mere 10 meters from a stand of trees. They all waited for the blinking blue light on the rear of the train to disappear. Perkins smoothed out the dirt where she'd fallen and propped up the crops she had flattened. Hopefully it would be a while before the farmer noticed the damage. The others followed her example, then they assembled.
"What's next, ma'am?" Dave asked.
He stood on his left foot, favoring his right.
"Are you mobile, Chica?" Perkins asked.
"Yes, ma'am."
Dave rotated his ankle.
"Tweak my ankle. It'll be better when it's warmed up."
"Good." Perkins checked her Z-phone and indicated the forest on the other side of the tracks.
"Emby says we go that way. We need to hustle, and no using lights until we're out of sight."
She pointed to the lights of the farmhouse behind them across the field.
"Use the low-light camera of your phone to see. Jarrett, you take the lead."
Shauna nearly poked her eyes out by colliding with low-hanging branches in the dark, before remembering to hold a hand up in front of her face. Her other hand held her Z-phone with its rear-facing night-vision camera pointed forward. The phone feature was supposed to be used with goggles. Here, they had to try walking through feet-tangling underbrush while looking at a small screen. The four stumbled slowly and awkwardly through the forest in darkness, made worse because it had begun to drizzle. When Major Perkins in the rear announced she could no longer see the lights of the farmhouse, she allowed the team to use their Z-phones as lights on a low setting. Now that they could see, they made rapid progress through the forest, guided by maps on their Z-phones. Emby contacted Perkins twice, urging her to move faster. When they came upon a road, they broke into a steady run, and soon, Perkins was grateful for the drizzling rain. It soaked her hair, making her short ponytail hang limply against the back of her neck. The rain also cooled her, running through the warm and humid night air.
"Hold here," Perkins said in a harsh whisper as her Z-phone beeped with a warning message when they neared a bend in the road.
"Truck coming! Off the road!" she shouted.
They ran through the woods into a stand of bushes and lay flat, phone lights off. The electric motors of Ruhar trucks were quiet, and the gently falling rain muffled sound, so they saw the truck's headlights eerily casting beams through the trees before they heard the vehicle. It approached from beyond the curve, lights bouncing as it moved fast along the rough dirt road. The truck slowed as it approached, making Perkins fear that the Ruhar had discovered their escape and tracked their location by Z-phone. Maybe Emby was not as smart as they said they were. The truck slowed to a crawl, and Perkins' mind raced. If the Ruhar knew where Perkins and her team were, should they run or surrender? Surrender seemed to be the smart play, because if Emby couldn't even cover their escape from a train, it was unlikely Perkins could complete a complex mission of awakening buried maser cannons. Had she been a fool for believing a mysterious benefactor? Was the whole situation some elaborate joke or a setup to embarrass UNEF? No. The truck had slowed only to negotiate the sharp bend in the road and a deep puddle. Even at reduced speed, the truck's tires threw up a splash as it hit the puddle, briefly obscuring the headlights. Then it cleared the curve and accelerated, speeding onward through the rainy night. Perkins rose to her feet, brushing mud from her uniform top.
"Ma'am," Jesse whispered in the utter darkness, echoing Perkins' own fears.
"I thought they knew we were here."
"Apparently not.
Emby would have warned us," she said hopefully. "Back to the road. We need to make up time," she ordered, as Emby sent another message urging them to hurry.
She turned her Z-phone light back on and they ran fairly hard down the road another 2 kilometers. Perkins was winded, and she noted the three younger people were also breathing hard. Life as a farmer didn't leave much opportunity for running. They came over a slight rise in the road and saw the lights of a small village. Just ahead, the forest gave way to fields of crops growing in straight rows.
"Stop here," she ordered, rechecking the message on her Z-phone to make sure she hadn't missed anything.
"There's a village up ahead. Emby says they're all asleep. There's a train coming soon."
Her phone was counting down from around 7 minutes.
"It will slow down when it goes through the village. The residents don't like noisy trains while they're trying to sleep."
She smiled, and Ski almost laughed.
"The tracks are about 0.5 kilometer ahead, although she couldn't see anything in the rainy night. We're supposed to wait behind a shed next to the tracks, then we climb on as it goes by. The last 10 cars are empty. Emby has unlocked the doors.
Coulter, you go first this time. The rest of us try to get on the same car. If not, get on top and go forward or back to whatever car Coulter gets onto.
Ma'am, Jesse asked. In the dark, how do we know which are the last 10 cars?
Dave looked through his Z-phone's night vision feature.
I can see good enough.
The train cars were big, about 80 feet long.
I'll count off for you.
You better be right about it, Ski, Jesse said.
Jesse grabbed a handrail beside a door, and hanging on with one hand, he slid the door open and tossed his satchel in. Running alongside, the other three threw their satchels in the open door, then Jesse helped Perkins up into the doorway. Shauna stumbled over a rock but caught the handrail, then Jesse got hold of her arm and swung her inside. Dave almost made it, running on a gimpy ankle, but he tripped and fell flat. Jesse almost jumped out to help his friend before Dave got to his feet and caught the handrail of the next car, waving Jesse off. Making up for falling in the dirt, Dave shimmied up the handrail to the roof of the car, then crawled on hands and knees to the car ahead. Awkwardly, he slid down feet first until Jesse and Shauna grasped his legs, then he let go of the roof, and the three fell to sprawl inside the empty car. The train was beginning to pick up speed as Perkins closed the door, making sure it was closed all the way. Snapping on her light, she looked around the inside. There was some trash, such as straps, packing material, and busted cardboard boxes. Otherwise, it was just empty, scuffed, and well-used composite material.
Chaika, your ankle is worse than you told me?
No, ma'am, Dave said defensively. I tripped on a rock or something. I'm squared away.
Perkins was not entirely convinced.
Take your boot off and I'll look at it. Amby says we'll be here until about mid-morning.
Dave untied his boot and laughed.
What's so funny? Shauna asked. She didn't see much humor in their situation. We hopped aboard a freight car. We've got no jobs and no money.
Dave reached in his satchel and pulled out a can of nutrient mush.
And all we have to eat is beans.
We're hobos.
Hey.
Jesse offered a fist bump and Ski accepted.
Brother, Jesse said with a wry smile. First hobos on an alien planet. That's gotta count for something.
Around mid-morning, the train slowed suddenly. Embi had told Perkins the train's locomotive would experience a temporary mechanical difficulty while going around a curve. When the train slowed enough, Perkins and her team were to get off on the outside of the curve where the engineer and the locomotive couldn't look back and see them. When the train was down to a slow walking pace, the four humans bailed out, being careful not to injure themselves as the area was thickly forested. They dashed into the woods and lay down. As soon as they were hidden, whatever Embi had done to the locomotive fixed itself and the train picked up speed again. Once the train had gone out of sight and could barely be heard, Shauna stood up carefully.
Ma'am, she asked Major Perkins, who is this mysterious benefactor? The engineer of that train is one of them? Or they can remotely control anything on this planet?
Yeah, Jesse added.
And how did Embi know that truck was coming down the road last night? Or that everyone in the village where we hopped that train, he pointed down the tracks, was asleep?
People, I worked intel, and not knowing the identity of our mysterious benefactor is bugging the shit out of me, Perkins admitted. If we're successful, we may find out someday. If this mission isn't successful, I have a feeling MB will bail on us real fast. I'm not doing this for MB, whoever they are. I'm doing this to give UNEF a chance, even a tiny chance, to avoid being slaves of the lizards. You still in?
Oh, hell yes, ma'am, Jesse nodded.
I can't remember the last time I didn't have a bad feeling about a mission.
They walked off and on, taking short breaks until late afternoon. Then Perkins declared a rest. MB insisted they were safe, but Perkins ordered everyone to take 45-minute shifts as sentry to be sure. She took the first shift, and her own eyelids were heavy when Chaika took over. It felt like she had just gotten semi-comfortable on the ground when Jarrett shook her awake.
It's time, ma'am, Shauna said quietly. With long practice from her military career, Perkins came to alertness. The sun had set, so it was dark, with clouds covering the sky. At least it wasn't raining. Rubbing her eyes to make them focus, she immediately checked her Z-phone. There were no new messages from Embi, but as she turned her eyes away from the screen, a new message appeared. Everything is on schedule, the message read. You have 56 minutes to travel the last kilometer. How did you know that I just woke up? Perkins typed suspiciously,
and even before she hit the send button, there was a reply. Your phone moved and you activated it to check messages, Major Perkins, the message read. You and your team should eat now. This is going to be a long night. Giving up on MB revealing any more information about their sources and methods, Perkins sat on a log.
Eat up, people. We need to get moving soon, and this is going to be a busy night.
Dave reached into his satchel and pulled out one of his dwindling supply of nutrient mush cans.
I hope MB gets us more food along with transport and a drill rig, ma'am.
Perkins nodded.
MB says they've got it covered. They know we can't eat the native life or Ruhar food.
Shauna popped open her can of mush and looked at it without interest. She tipped her head back and swallowed it as quickly as she could. Running a finger around the bottom to get every last drop, she made a face.
Sure, MB will get us food, enough to carry out the mission. Then they won't need us.
We have to take that risk, Perkins agreed grimly.
Ha, Jesse laughed.
We're sneaking around between two advanced species that can blast us from orbit. Maybe we'll get lucky, and we'll take a railgun dart before we starve.
Amen to that, brother.
Dave popped open a can of mush.
Maybe I'll shoot myself if I have to survive on this crap much longer.
According to MB, their mission that night was simple. Inside a warehouse on the outskirts of a village was a truck loaded with the portable drilling rig and boxes containing human food, real food, from Earth, mostly canned or MREs. All Perkins and her team needed to do was get into the warehouse, which was unlocked. Then they would start the truck, roll aside the big door, drive the truck out, and slide the door closed behind them. To cover the sound of the truck, MB would create a distraction. A ventilation fan in a barn on the other side of the village would overheat and begin making a terrible screeching racket. Then the fan's motor would catch on fire. That would keep the hamsters busy while the humans drove away with their prize, and they would keep driving, all night. It will be suspicious for a truck loaded with human food to go missing, Perkins typed. The remaining supply of human food from Earth had to be a small, carefully guarded item. How could such a valuable thing be sitting unguarded in a warehouse? Again, before she hit the send button, there was a reply. The boxes of human food are mislabeled, Ambie said. No one knows they are in that truck. We only took a small amount of your food. It will not be missed, and no one will be going into that warehouse for weeks. How did you arrange that? Perkins asked. Humanity is not the only species with a cumbersome bureaucracy, Major Perkins. It is easy for things to get lost. This is a big planet. You need to get moving. Perkins explained the plan to her skeptical team.
Just like that, ma'am, Jesse asked. This MB gift-wrapped a truck for us?
Just like that, Perkins confirmed. MB has done right by us so far. I'm going to trust them, whoever they are.